Chapter 17. Money for nothing, checks for free. From Orlando, hop on State Road 408 toward the Atlantic Ocean, pass Englewood Park and the airport, veer right as the highway becomes East Colonial Drive, and hang a left just beyond Zaxby's Chicken Fingers. Venture north 15 minutes, past landscaped subdivisions, the Hitching Post Bar and Grill, and three large Christian churches. Two rights and a left will bring you to Kingfisher Point, on the northeast tip of Lake Mills. Enter the gated community, proceed to the property marked 3018, click open the gates, crawl up the circular brick drive, and behold, a stolen American dream. A brilliant white facade, oak double doors, and 30 windows welcome visitors to a 13,000-square-foot mansion with multiple common areas, 7 bedrooms, and a guest house facing the pool and submerged wet bar. Inside, a stone-floored atrium leads to a large living room and fireplace, a dining area, and a marbled kitchen with stainless steel appliances. In the south wing is the two-story library, the British-style pub room, and the theater. Pass through any number of glass doors toward the pool, then head to the tennis courts beyond and the 5-horse stable beyond that. Now, take in all 12 acres of scorched, flat land surrounding the home's unnatural opulence. It could all be yours for just over $4.8 million. Alternatively, you could get it for free with taxpayer money and a few hours of work. At least that's what federal investigators say Don Cisternino did before he was indicted on multiple fraud charges and fled to Croatia. After the CARES Act passed in spring 2020, the federal government began issuing $800 billion in forgivable loans to support businesses that retained, rehired, and continued to pay employees through the pandemic. The Paycheck Protection Program loans were guaranteed by the Small Business Administration, but processed and paid out through traditional banks and online lenders who had financial incentives to rush out as many loans as possible. The PPP and other relief programs were established overnight, with no initial transparency into who was getting paid and negligible vetting of those who applied. The SBA prioritized speed above all else. As a result, virtually anyone with a bank account could ask for millions and receive it in days. It created a bonanza rife with fraud. Lots and lots of fraud. Really, just bonkers stuff. After Congress approved the program, Cisternino, an actor and producer who played on an episode of the hit TV series ER, opened a bank account under a dormant marketing company. The company had no payroll and no employees except for Cisternino and his romantic partner, according to his indictment. But Cisternino told a small business lender in Central Florida that he had an average monthly payroll of $2.9 million and 441 employees. A sizable company, but just under the 500 maximum to qualify as a small business. To get a loan, applicants had to fill out an application and provide evidence such as tax statements and bank records. Companies that showed the cash went to paychecks and expenses like rent could have some or all of the loan amount forgiven. According to federal prosecutors in Florida, Cisternino lied on the SBA application when he submitted it to a commercial lender and fabricated bank and federal tax statements. He also submitted fake payroll records with names and social security numbers of employees who didn't work for his company, court records show. Cisternino submitted his application on May 5th. Less than 3 weeks later, the government approved it and issued more than $7.2 million to the lender, which deposited the cash into Cisternino's account. Cisternino, in his mid-40s and with few Hollywood credentials to his name, was apparently in significant debt, but he had now hit the jackpot. He behaved accordingly. 2 days after the money was wired on May 30th, Sister Nino went to a dealership and dropped more than $89,000 on a Lincoln Navigator. A few weeks later, he went to a dealership in the Sleepy Beach community of Sarasota and dropped more than $251,000 on a Mercedes-Benz. He also paid off $48,000 still owed on his Maserati, $7,000 owed on his partner's Nissan, and another $1.4 million in personal debt. Sister Nino paid another $41,000 to lawyers who represented him in an old lawsuit filed against him by a bank, and he paid $175,000 to GoDaddy.com to buy internet domains. On July 6th, the same day news outlets reported that 3,778 Floridians had died of COVID, and as the state had shut down bars for the second time, Sister Nino bought his Seminole County mansion and 12 acres, paying more than $3.1 million in cash. By the time he was indicted the next winter, federal agents seeking to seize his assets found that he had distributed about $1 million in cash across various accounts, but he'd already spent most of it on his piece of the Florida myth. After his indictment, Sister Nino went on the lam. He was eventually arrested in the spring of 2021 on an international warrant near the border of Croatia and Slovenia. According to a Croatian news outlet, Sister Nino would tell a judge there, "I was afraid that the new administration under President Joe Biden would prosecute me for this kind of business, even though it was allowed during the Trump administration. That is why I decided to flee to Europe after the election in the U.S. and seek asylum in Russia or some other country." His was just one of hundreds of colorful schemes that erupted from the loose oversight and fast cash of the PPP program. Many people used inactive companies to get loans, while others bought shell companies with no operations to create the illusion of legitimate business activity. They bought luxury cars, homes, yachts, and jewelry. As Americans suffered, they flourished, while the FBI and Justice Department struggled to catch up to billions of dollars that had been clumsily scattered across the country. On the Gulf Coast of Florida, in Fort Myers, the owner of a roofing and sheet metal company lied his way into getting more than $2 million in loans. Casey David Crowther didn't use those funds to keep his business afloat and pay his workers, which was the program's purpose. Instead, for just $700,000, he kept himself afloat in a new 40-foot catamaran. A conviction and 3-year prison sentence would later take the wind out of his sails. For a time, Florida was home to the largest known PPP fraud scheme, a network of 9 people, 7 of them in Florida and 2 in Ohio, worked together to defraud the program, according to the Justice Department. The scheme involved recruiting small business owners and submitting more than 90 fraudulent PPP applications on their behalf in exchange for kickbacks. Among the defendants were Joshua Bellamy, who at the time was a wide receiver for the New York Jets, and his talent manager, who prosecutors say concocted the plan after obtaining a fraudulent loan of his own. Prosecutors allege that Bellamy got more than $1.2 million for his company, Drip Entertainment LLC, and that he purchased more than $104,000 in luxury fashion items from retailers such as Dior and Gucci. The co-conspirators applied for $24 million in forgivable loans, many of which were rejected by lenders. More than 40 slipped through, however, resulting in payouts of about $17 million. When a federal agent, posing as someone who could help Bellamy get another forgivable loan, asked how many employees Bellamy was paying, the NFL player said, "I got as many employees as I want." Bellamy allegedly told the agent to seek out $1.2 million on the loan, which was more than the 15 employees they had discussed would warrant. "Put 50 then," he told the agent, according to court records. A man in the Dallas suburb of Coppell went bigger, as Texans do. Dinesh Shah sought more than $24.8 million through 15 fraudulent applications on behalf of 11 companies from 8 different lenders. In those applications, Shah claimed the businesses had hundreds of thousands of dollars in payroll expenses. In all, he collected $17.3 million, which he used to buy multiple homes in Texas, pay off a mortgage in California, and buy a fleet of luxury cars, including a Corvette Stingray, a Porsche, and a Bentley convertible. Shah would later plead guilty to fraud charges and be sentenced to 11 years in prison. In Georgia, a reality TV personality who starred on the show Love & Hip Hop Atlanta was arrested and charged with fraud related to his $3.7 million PPP loan. Maurice Fain, a.k.a. Arkansas Moe, spent most of the loot in just days. His shopping spree included $85,000 in jewelry, including a Rolex presidential watch, a diamond bracelet, and 5.7-carat diamond ring for himself. He used $40,000 to pay child support, which is nice but still illegal. Less impressive, he leased a Rolls-Royce with $136,000 and paid $50,000 in restitution for a previous fraud conviction. As FBI investigators dug into his finances, they learned he paid $230,000 to associates involved in a multi-state Ponzi scheme in which he defrauded 20 people going back to 2013. He would later be sentenced to 17 years in prison. In the program's first year, including two waves of loans, more than 120 people would be criminally charged by the Justice Department. Counting PPP fraud and looting of similar relief programs, such as the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, the Justice Department had charged more than 470 defendants, involving about $570 million in taxpayer-guaranteed and largely forgivable loans. The true accounting of fraud in those programs is likely much worse. Many such schemes began or occurred in the first months of the pandemic, as many legitimate small businesses in dire need of a lifeline struggled to obtain loans. That struggle was especially pronounced among minority businesses and self-employed people who lacked existing relationships with traditional banks or otherwise got tangled in paperwork. The program's design, rushing cash out through large and regional banks and their customers, favored the richest clients. Banks focused on providing fewer big loans to established businesses. Customers wealthy enough to enjoy the concierge service of Citi's private bank, with a minimum account balance of $25 million, were fast-tracked. The nation's largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, swiftly doled out loans to almost all of its private and commercial banking clients who applied, the New York Times reported in April 2020. But only 1 in 15 customers who held traditional savings and checking accounts got loans in that initial phase. Chase wouldn't even consider loans of less than $1,000, which could go a long way for many struggling entrepreneurs. By mid-April 2020, about 2 weeks into the program, the first gush of $349 billion in forgivable loans had run out. Yet the smallest and neediest companies were left in a lurch, forced to either close or lay off employees, who would file for unemployment benefits. While the Trump administration tried to keep secret the details about which companies got loans, corporate filings and other disclosures began to show that much of the money hadn't gone to small businesses, as was intended by Congress and advertised to the public, but rather had flowed to large companies and publicly traded corporations. That included many companies that were awash in cash or could raise money on the stock market, unlike the small restaurateurs, bakers, salon owners, and others who needed loans. The parent company of Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, a high-end dining chain with 5,000 employees, was among the first to disclose that it received $20 million through Chase, just 4 days after the SBA launched the program. Ruth's Hospitality Group, Inc. had reported $42 million in profits the year before and distributed $41 million back to shareholders in stock buybacks and dividends. Potbelly Sandwich Shop got $10 million. Shake Shack, which had as much as $100 million in cash on hand, received $10 million. Large hotel companies, exploiting a loophole in the program, collected tens of millions in loans through subsidiaries and franchised properties. Following public scrutiny and warnings from lawmakers and the Treasury Department, many of the loans would be returned by companies, including Ruth's Chris, Potbelly, and Shake Shack. Through spring 2020 and well into the summer, countless anecdotes of minority business owners who struggled to get loans spilled out across the country in local and national media. This unequal distribution of help at a critical time coalesced with decades of compounding disadvantages facing minority-owned businesses and highlighted the existing racial bias in the nation's banking system. Several studies would show that banks favored wealthy white borrowers at the expense of minority companies in dire need of assistance. For instance, the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, a nonprofit in Washington, sent pairs of white and black would-be PPP applicants to branches of 17 banks. Each pair in the Mystery Shopper study had similar credit and wealth, though black shoppers were given a slightly better financial profile to eliminate doubt. The study found that potential white borrowers were consistently treated better, while black borrowers were offered different products and otherwise received worse treatment from bank employees in 43% of the tests. The full extent of inequity in the PPP loan program may never be fully understood, because the federal government made the inclusion of data on race and gender optional. But a New York Times analysis, using census and other data, found that 75% of loans released in the first phase went to businesses in areas where a majority of residents are white. As ProPublica reported, while the number of black-owned businesses was trending upward before the pandemic, the vast majority were sole proprietorships. For example, a self-employed hairstylist, accountant, freelancer, taxi driver, or musical artist. By July 2020, more than 18% fewer self-employed black people were working than in the year before. Compare that to just 6.2% fewer self-employed white people. The 1-2 punch of an economic crisis and the program's flawed design hit straight at the upward mobility of black entrepreneurs and their families. Some of that unequal relief would be addressed through millions of smaller loans churned out by financial tech companies, commonly referred to as fintech. These online lenders aren't banks, but rather work as intermediaries to connect applicants with lenders and investors. Fintech entered the mainstream with the advent of companies like SoFi, which offered more favorable rates than banks for those looking to consolidate student loan debt. But the model found a niche, and billions in easy profit, in servicing small and struggling businesses that banks had overlooked or turned away. Through automation, data, and statistical models that help determine if applicants will repay a loan, fintechs removed much of the human work from the loan approval process. With less human involvement, it appears, came less racial bias. Researchers at New York University, for instance, found that businesses owned by black people were 70% more likely to have gotten their PPP loan from fintech than a small bank. The robots were more human than human. While that was good for millions of small businesses eking by, it was a multi-billion dollar boon for fintech companies, including two that entered the fray during the pandemic. The PPP program offered lenders a 5% cut on every loan they approved that totaled less than $350,000, which was most loans. Because the federal government had guaranteed the loans, those lenders had almost no risk and all upside to approve as many loans as possible. The rules of the program incentivized speed and disincentivized basic due diligence, which could have curtailed pervasive fraud. Two companies, Blue Acorn and Womply, came out of nowhere and launched savvy marketing campaigns to attract sole proprietors, gig workers such as Uber drivers, and small businesses to apply for loans that paid out quickly. Together, the two would account for a third of all PPP loans approved, collecting as much as $3 billion in fees from the federal government. Blue Acorn was formed just as the loan program presented the opportunity. Womply, which had been around for years and sold marketing software, pivoted to focus on PPP loans. The democratization of $800 billion in relief, spreading wealth to where it was most needed, surely helped countless Americans. But it also welcomed cheaters who are harder to track and will likely keep federal investigators busy for years. The SBA and the Trump administration tried to keep secret the data detailing about 12 million PPP loans to 970,000 organizations, which was a ludicrous violation of the Freedom of Information Act. So ProPublica and four other major news outlets banded together to sue for the release of the data, which a judge ruled should be made public in fall 2020. Two of my colleagues, Lydia DePillis and Derek Willis, began crunching and looking for patterns and outliers, like the federal contracting data we'd parsed months before. The inquiry led to a year of fruitful investigations that revealed rampant fraud and waste. Of all the wacky fraud stories to fall out of the pandemic relief funds, none were so outrageous and entertaining as theirs. They grouped loans by lenders, ran a few filters, made dozens of calls, and found that one fintech company had awarded nearly 400 forgivable loans worth $7 million to fake companies. Cabbage, an Atlanta-based fintech, had awarded sizable loans to non-existent farms, which should have raised red flags. Ritter Wheat Club and Dealey Nuts, one a wheat farm and the other a nut farm, were each awarded the maximum amount for sole proprietors, nearly $21,000. Tomato Cramber and Seaweed Blyman also got sizable loans. Loan applications listed these companies to residential addresses in Ocean County, New Jersey, a vacation hotspot that includes the Jersey Shore Boardwalk, rows of summer homes and ice cream shops, but no industrial farming. None of the companies existed in New Jersey business filings, which are the very first stop on any look into a business. When the reporters called the homes to which the companies were listed, their owners expressed shock. One supposed cattle ranch they checked up on, Beefy King, traced to the home of Long Beach Township's mayor, who told Willis, "There's no farming here. We're a sandbar, for Christ's sake." The two drilled down further on Cabbage's loans and found farms with funny names in improbable locales across the country. They found potato and strawberry farms in the same town in Nebraska, listed to a banker and anesthesiologist who had no idea why they were in the loan data as farmers. They found fake potato farms in sandy Palm Beach, Florida, and orange groves in freezing Minnesota. The reporters identified fake farm after fake farm and began to see a distinctive naming convention. Whoever applied for these loans took part of the name of someone who lived at the address and just placed it next to a random agricultural term. Some examples: Kitina Finfish of Tempe, Arizona; Tree Charles Patterson of Panama City, Florida; Rice Fields Deshong of Pendleton, Indiana; and Willis's personal favorite, McDonald Not Burgers But Flowers of Cornwall, New York. All these non-existent firms were awarded sizable loans. Through numerous calls and cross-referencing with business filings and data, the reporting duo mapped out hundreds of fake businesses, most of them imaginary farms, many traced back to dense clusters in Florida, Nebraska, Virginia, and New Jersey. After talking with unsuspecting people whose information was used to apply for the loans, the reporters found connections. In New Jersey, several people they called had hired the same financial accounting firm, which had notified its clients of a ransomware attack in which hackers obtained Social Security numbers and other financial information. Seeing the common ties between the addresses of the phony farms, it appeared they may have been the result of synthetic identity theft, in which bits of personal information like birth dates, home addresses, and Social Security numbers can be stitched together by criminals to make a fake credit profile. Together, that information can be used to take out loans and do incredible damage to people's credit. Reporters dug further into Cabbage and found the company was a veritable PPP loan mill. In just the first round of loans, Cabbage had processed nearly 300,000 loans, second only to Bank of America. This was an astonishing total, considering the relative invisibility of Cabbage compared to the nation's banking behemoths. By talking to former employees and scouring publicly available information such as court records, reporters found Cabbage was in dire financial straits when the pandemic hit. Its largest customer base, small businesses like coffee shops and yoga studios, were forced to shut down amid the lockdowns. With loan writing on hiatus, the company furloughed more than half of its nearly 600-person staff. But government-backed loans with hefty fees offered a lifeline. By August 2020, the company had completed $7 billion in loans and pocketed 5% of each loan it processed directly and an undisclosed take on loans it processed for banks. What human review did happen was perfunctory. Cabbage managers who held the most company stock had personal financial incentives to push loans through, according to former Cabbage employees. In one report detailing the company's PPP blitz, the company boasted that it approved 75% of all its loans without human review. What I found most astonishing about this story is that, while it was clear that millions in loans had been paid out to fake companies, some apparently manufactured using stolen identities, it was unclear who got that cash. It would take the resources of the federal government to track down wire transfers and connect bank accounts to the apparent culprits. The spend first and ask questions later mentality would result in a massive cleanup effort. According to the inspector general who looks over the SBA, the government estimates it approved 55,000 loans for ineligible businesses, and that 43,000 businesses obtained more money than they should have. The release of the loan data led to dozens of other investigative pieces by ProPublica and others, including several that detailed how companies that collected hundreds of millions of dollars still laid off employees and eliminated jobs the program was meant to protect. The Center for Public Integrity, an investigative nonprofit in Washington, reported that $1.8 billion in loans had been awarded to companies that laid off 90,000 workers during the pandemic. ProPublica data reporters set up a searchable and free public database that allowed anyone to comb through nearly 12 million loans the government didn't want anyone to see. The database led to scores of local media stories about those who had fleeced the program. Still, more than $395 billion, almost half the total cost of the program, had been forgiven by the federal government. Free money. When the database went live, I wondered if any of the companies I had encountered were in there. I typed in Robert Stewart Jr.'s company, Federal Government Experts, procurer of non-existent N95s, and renter of private jets. The company popped up as having received $805,000 in loans, which had been disbursed on May 1st. The same week the federal government had canceled Stewart's deal and launched a fraud investigation into the company. Stewart reported that all the money was devoted to payroll, saving 37 jobs. I had gone to Stewart's tiny and empty office in Falls Church, Virginia, and I'd seen his operation up close. I knew for a fact he did not have 37 employees. It was a lie.